Fusion, the international science radio show.
We have a bouncer and the doors of perception.
The good, the bad, the ugly.
It gets pretty exciting.
The myths, the truths.
Toxicology.
Astro-seismology.
Magnetism. The dark side.
Genetically engineered potatoes.
Planetoid.
Planetoid.
I love that word.
Hello and welcome to Diffusion. Sit back and relax while we inoculate your brain with weird and wonderful science. I'm Ian Wolfe. This week, solar cells so efficient they still generate power in the shade. But first up, news of a treatment for COVID-19, climate that's already changed, and a new moon. The first clinical trial in the United States of a possible coronavirus treatment is underway in Nebraska and is expected to include 400 patients at 50 locations around the world. They're being tested with an antiviral drug developed for Ebola called remdesivir. Dr. Andrew Khalil, who will oversee the study at the University of Nebraska Medical Center, said that patients who are hospitalized with the novel coronavirus COVID-19 will be eligible to join the trial if they have at least moderate symptoms. The World Health Organization has cited studies that suggest remdesivir might be able to target SARS and MERS, which are cousins of the new virus. Meanwhile, researchers at the University of Queensland have started testing a COVID-19 vaccine on animals. Australia now has two cases where COVID-19 has transferred from people who caught the infection in China to people who never travelled. In the meantime, the advice from experts is don't sneeze or cough into the air or your hands. Try for a tissue, handkerchief, or your elbow. Wash your hands really often. Wash daily the things that you touch often, like the screen of your phone or tablet. And finally, try hard not to touch your face when you're in public, even when it itches. Pandemic police state. The Australian federal government has declared a pandemic of COVID-19 and declared their intention of invoking the Draconian Biosecurity Act of 2015. In 2014, the same Liberal National Government cut funding to Australia's only Level 4 pathogen containment laboratory, then working on the viruses causing Ebola and MERS, the Australian Animal Health Laboratory in Geelong, Victoria. CSIRO was forced to fire 8 of their scientists. Infectious disease experts warned cuts to research would leave the country vulnerable to new and emerging diseases. We're now relying on this laboratory to grow and contain COVID-19 virus safely and test new vaccine and drugs. You might think, with the danger of COVID-19, that a rational response would be to increase funding to this laboratory and to hire more scientists to work on prevention and treatment. Instead, the Attorney General Christian Porter has announced that Australia will be subject to the extreme clauses of the Biosecurity Act of 2015.
They're very important laws. They will be, in some instances, strange and foreign to many Australians, but they will become very important, I would suspect, over the next couple of months. It's very likely that these laws will get used on a larger scale, and it's very likely that Australians will encounter practices and instructions and circumstances that they've not had to encounter before.
Pauline Wright, President of the Law Society of Australia, warns that the exceptional powers under the Act do not have the types of safeguards and independent oversight protections afforded our law enforcement and security agencies' exercise of coercive powers. While control orders in cases of infectious diseases may be justified, there is no requirement for a person to actually be infected or for the officer to even reasonably believe or suspect that the person is infected or may be infected with a listed human disease before a control order can be made. It appears all of the power will be in the hands of the Minister for Home Affairs, Peter Dutton. While the Premier of Victoria has offered an extra $6 million for COVID-19 vaccine research, there's no extra science funding from the Australian federal government. Goodbye winter. Global warming has increased the temperature of the world by an average of 1 degree from what it was in 1880, before industrialisation. In Australia, the climate has changed from what it was in the 1950s and 60s. Summers are getting longer and winters are getting shorter. This has happened across Australia and will continue until we get carbon dioxide and methane emissions to net zero. A new report from the Australia Institute Climate and Energy Program uses information from the Bureau of Meteorology to graph changes in temperatures from the middle of the 20th century to 2019, and finds that Australian seasons have been shifting. Their analysis identifies the average temperature at the start and end of summer, mid-20th century, and then looks at how these temperatures have changed in the years since. In the 1950s and 60s, summers were 3 months long. In the 20 years from 1989 to 2018, summers have become 31 days longer than the 1950s summers, while winters have become 23 days shorter than the 1950s winters. Over the 5 years from 2014 to 2018, Australian capital city summers were twice as long as their winters. Summers in regional areas like Port Macquarie, where the fire started in 2019, are now 7 extra weeks of traditional summer temperatures from what they experienced in the 1950s and 60s. As the length of bushfire summer season extends, the window to use our bushfire management techniques, like safe hazard reduction burning, typically in winter, shrinks. If 1 degree of global warming causes the wildfire havoc of 2019, and even longer summers and shorter winters, what's in store for us as we creep up to the Australian government's carbon dioxide emission targets of 3 to 4 degrees of global warming?
This is coal. Don't be afraid. Don't be scared.
The Treasurer knows the rule on crops.
It's coal.
The report is called Out of Season: Expanding Summers and Shrinking Winters in Subtropical and Temperate Australia, by Tom Swan and Mark Ogg, and can be downloaded from the Australia Institute, tai.org.au. New Moon. Astronomers have discovered an unidentified object about the size of a car is orbiting the Earth. The object has been named 2020 CD3. Astronomers calculate it's been orbiting for about 3 years, and it's likely to escape Earth orbit to head out of the solar system by April 2020. It was first seen on the 19th of February 2020 by astronomers at the Catalina Sky Survey in Arizona. The Minor Planet Center, which monitors small bodies in space, has announced that 2020 CD3 doesn't match any known artificial object. This means it's a captured asteroid, or maybe a spy satellite. The last and only time we know of Earth capturing a passing asteroid into orbit was 2006 RH120, which arrived in September 2006 and left Earth orbit in June 2007. 2020 CD3 circles our planet about once every 47 days on a wide oval-shaped orbit that mostly swoops far outside the Moon's path. We'll find out in April if the calculations are correct and 2020 CD3 leaves Earth or orbits us for a while longer. Julian Assange is still in court for his hearing on whether he can be extradited to the United States to be tortured for his political activities as an investigative journalist and publisher. He's made to sit in a glass cage at the back of the courtroom where he's not allowed to speak. Unlike everyone else in the room, he has no microphone and is not permitted to sit with his lawyers to speak with them. When his lawyers complained, they were told that he could pass notes up through the courtroom or they could stop the entire proceedings while he's transferred to a holding cell back inside the prison, allowing the conference with his lawyers, and then transferred back, which would take several hours each time. Here's more than 1,300 journalists from around the world speaking up for Assange.
We journalists around the globe express our grave concern for Julian Assange's detention in a high-security British prison.
And for the unprecedented espionage charges he faces in the United States.
If he is extradited to the US, he could receive a sentence of 175 years in prison.
This is the first time a publisher is being prosecuted for disclosing classified information.
This is why I'm speaking up in defense of Julian Assange. Now, at this dangerous time.
He's being prosecuted
for the crime of revealing war crimes.
It is a terrible miscarriage of justice.
And as a precedent, threatens our journalist colleagues working all around the globe.
Without WikiLeaks, we wouldn't know about
the evidence of war crimes in Iraq and Afghanistan.
NSA spying on world leaders and UN representatives. Abuse and torture at Guantanamo and other sites. And much more.
Publishing classified information in the public interest is an essential part of journalism.
Many of the media outlets we work for release these stories alongside WikiLeaks.
If the US government can extradite Assange for this, it will clear the way for governments
to criminalize any of us anywhere in the world. Who will be next?
Journalists and publishers should be able to shed light on government wrongdoing without the fear of being jailed.
We, journalists of many countries, demand that Assange be released immediately from prison.
That the UK government and judiciary refuse to permit a politically motivated extradition.
And that the US government drop the charges of espionage.
What happens to Julian Assange could happen to all of us.
And finally, here's the UN Rapporteur on Torture, Niels Melzer.
First of all, Julian Assange and WikiLeaks exposed systematic torture that has not been prosecuted. So impunity for torture is a clear violation of the Convention Against Torture, and I need to intervene in this matter. Secondly, we have examined Julian Assange and we have medical evidence that he has been exposed to psychological torture and is continually now exposed to psychological torture, which again is clearly within my mandate to intervene on his behalf. Thirdly, if Julian Assange gets extradited to the United States, he's likely to be tortured until the day he dies. And that, to prevent that, again, I'm called to intervene.
You're listening to Ian Wolfe on Diffusion Science Radio. Send emails to science@diffusionradio.com. We're brought to you across Australia on the Community Radio Network and podcast over the internet on www.diffusionradio.com. Solar power that works in the shade. The 2019 winner of the Excellence in Outstanding Early Career Research Scopus Award is Young Bai. He's an ARC DECRA Fellow at the University of Queensland, working on a new class of semiconductors using quantum dots for integrated solar power conversion and storage. They convert so many electrons from light that they can generate power in the shade as well as sunlight. I began by congratulating Young for winning the award and asking him, what is a quantum dot?
Thank you. Quantum dot semiconductor materials actually semiconductor materials at nanoscales, usually below 10 nanometers. The semiconductor materials at this nanoscale will have unique or tremendous optoelectronic properties than its bulk counterparts. So the new class of quantum dot semiconductor materials we are currently developing are very promising in revolutionizing in the next generation hybrid photovoltaics. It has a unique property which is called multiple excitant generation effect. So which means, compared with traditional semiconductors like silicon, the quantum dot material might generate multiple electron and hole pairs, which means it has the potential to further boost the power conversion efficiency of a hybrid photovoltaics, well beyond the theoretical efficiency limit.
Quantum dots are used in the top-end TV displays at the moment to produce light?
Yes. So the new class quantum dot materials we are currently developing are not limited to photovoltaic application. It has also excellent emission properties, which makes it excellent candidate for next generation lighting and display. And also, it has fantastic properties as an X-ray imaging candidate.
So you're able to make more efficient solar cells because it's producing more electrons for every photon that hits it?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what sort of materials are you making the quantum dots out of?
The current quantum dot material is based on a semiconductor called halide perovskite. It has a chemical formula of ABX3, where A site is actually an inorganic or organic cation. It's like a cesium, like a methyl ammonia ions. And B site is usually lead, tin, and germanium. And X site is actually halogen.
Okay, so with this new material, you can make more efficient solar cells, and you can also make displays that can produce light and even X-rays.
Yes, because it is excellent material as for light emitting diodes. It has very pure color emission and very high luminance as light emitting diodes. And another major property of this material is its defect tolerance properties, which means we can make high quality semiconductor materials with high quality in a solution process.
So if it's resistant to defects, does that mean you can scale up the production more quickly?
Yes, that's correct. So we can use low cost and scalable solution process to make these materials and also for device fabrication.
I'm guessing you've already patented this?
Yes, we have already patented this. And a few leading companies have expressed their interests in scale up by using this type of new class quantum dot semiconductors.
And so what's the big difference between the previous quantum dot semiconductors and the breakthroughs in your laboratory?
As I mentioned before, this new class of quantum dot semiconductors have defect tolerance properties, which means we can easily make high quality materials compared with the traditional quantum dot materials on the market. So this means we can reduce the overall cost of the material making and device fabrication.
And I suppose that means that current quantum dot systems before your work were not so tolerant and it was very hard to scale them up.
It is very difficult to make high quality materials. Normally it relies on cold shell structure, which will make the synthesis process very complicated. And for traditional quantum dot materials, we need to control the synthesis very precisely. So it makes the process more difficult to scale up.
And this is quite a range of frequencies you're talking about producing and detecting. So if you can create X-rays with the material, does that mean you're detecting them as well?
Not create X-ray. It is sensitive to high, X-ray. It is an excellent materials for detecting, not only limited to low energy photons, but also to X-ray and even gamma.
So the astronomers would be interested in making telescopes out of them, perhaps?
Yes, I guess so. So I think this material are quite unique. in terms of its excellent optoelectronic properties. For example, it has very long charge diffusion length, which means upon light illumination or X-ray exposure, photo-generated electron holes have longer time to travel without immediate recommendation. So this property will make it an excellent candidate for a variety of photonic technologies, including solar cells, lighting and display technologies.
And cameras, perhaps?
Yes, you are right. I just wish this fantastic technology we are developing will eventually deliver some skill for the new economy in Australia and revolutionize the way we acquire energy. I mean, it could be a disruptive technology that changed the society by allowing the use of more renewable energy in the future while reducing the carbon dioxide emission.
So it's that much more efficient than what's available now.
Yes. And also, because the quantum dot semiconductor, when we deposit the quantum dot semiconductor as a thin film, such thin film will have very good mechanical strength due to the strong interparticle interaction. So which means it is a quantum dot semiconductor would be a great candidate for developing flexible and lightweight hybrid photovoltaics. It is very promising. It is very promising for developing building integrated photovoltaics or lightweight and flexible photovoltaic panel for a variety of applications with curved surfaces.
And when you say hybrid, what's a hybrid system?
It's kind of organic-inorganic hybrid semiconductor materials. And also, in a hybrid photovoltaics, it normally involves both organic and inorganic semiconductors.
So you're able to make very flexible and very strong solar cells that are way more efficient than what's available now.
Yeah, that's basically our target. Currently, the power conversion efficiency is still lower than the traditional silicon on solar cells, but it has some advantages that silicon does not have, such as the flexibility, lightweight, semi-transparency, and high efficiency on the diffused light. I mean, for example, weak light or room light, it still can work very efficiently. So this type of solar cell can be used for powering the Internet of Things.
So you've got a solar cell that can also work in the shade.
Yes, that's correct. And even you can put it in inside the building to efficiently absorb the room light. For example, the LED light you used for lighting.
So really, we should be putting this on everything because it doesn't have to face the sun to generate power.
Yes, that's correct. For small electronics and portable electronics, or even Internet of Things in our future, we do not need high power sources. Perhaps a small hybrid quantum dot solar cells can sufficiently provide the energy it required for the small electronics or Internet of Things. My long-term career goal would be the translation of my early discoveries to applications that can change the society by allowing the use of more renewable energies.
Well, Young, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
That was Young Boy from the University of Queensland and winner of the 2019 Excellence in Outstanding Early Career Scopus Award for using quantum dots to make solar panels that are so efficient they work in full sunlight or in the shade. And that's all from us this week on Diffusion. Are you a scientist, artist, biohacker, or maker who'd like to be interviewed about your work? would your company like to sponsor Diffusion? Send your contributions, opinions, helpful suggestions, and donations to science@diffusionradio.com. That's science@diffusionradio.com. Please like the Diffusion Science Radio page on Facebook and rate the show on iTunes. Tell your friends. Follow me on Twitter @IanWolf. The news music was Rhinos Theme by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com. I produce Diffusion, which is broadcast around Australia to 28 stations on the Community Radio Network, including 2 RBM in the Blue Mountains of New South Wales, 8CCC in Alice Springs and Tennant Creek, 2MVR in Nambucca Valley, 3MBR in the Mallee Border District of Victoria and South Australia, City Park Radio 7LTN in Launceston, Tasmania, and 2XXFM in Canberra. Diffusion is syndicated globally on the National Science Foundation's Science 360 internet radio station and also on astronomy.fm. Subscribe to the podcast on the Diffusion website, www.diffusionradio.com. That's www.diffusionradio.com. And check the website for links, photos and videos about this week's show. If you enjoyed this show, you can explore more than 1,000 previous episodes archived on diffusionradio.com, where the shows are labelled by keywords so you can focus in on the stories you want to hear. Join my patrons at patreon.com/diffusionradio. Make a donation through paypal.me/IanWolf. Support Diffusion by buying from the affiliate links at diffusionradio.com/support. Subscribe to the Diffusion YouTube channel at youtube.com/c/diffusionradio. I'm Ian Wolf. Join us inside your audio device of choice for more science wondering next week on Diffusion Science Radio.
Science is fun. It helps you to learn, to know, and to appreciate. When you study science, you may go on field trips. You discover the marvelous interrelationships between all living things. You learn to read the history of the earth as it is written in rocks and fossils. You find out what makes things tick. Everything from a molecule to a living organism. In the study of science is found the most useful and satisfying knowledge of man. Knowledge of his physical world, its past, its present, and its future. And in your moments of relaxation, now and in the years to come, you will find the study of science leading you into fascinating pursuits. Photography, collecting. Why study science? Study science because you will find in the study of science a richer, more rewarding life.